Okay, we go to the world headquarters of Thinking Real Estate. It's the Real Estate Lifestyle Show with Laura Dwyer Schlecky.
That's right. You never know what you're going to get.
Laura and Bill.
There you have it.
Welcome.
So happy belated Valentine's Day. Did
Welcome.
You get my present?
What?
What? I'm sorry. I forgot to send you a Valentine's card.
Happy President's Day.
Thank you.
Oh, yeah, that's right. Happy President's Day. So does that mean the banks are closed? Who's open today?
Come on. The banks are closed. Everybody's closed.
Banks are closed. Government's closed. Okay.
The only thing that's open is
government related is closed.
The only thing that's open is radio.
Radio. That's all we need.
It never
closes. Got all the news.
It never shuts down.
Radio never sleeps.
For nothing.
There you go.
For nobody.
There you go. Wow. Well, hey, so it's Black History Month, and we've talked about, what was the first week we talked about, kind of?
Yeah, just talking about the discrimination, particularly
in
the industry itself.
You know, oh, yeah,
the
that's
industry
right.
Itself. And then last week you were talking about
redlining.
You were talking about government.
So the first week was redlining. Second week was zoning. So we thought we'd talk about restrictive covenants. and before we go any further, I did get a letter from an anonymous person, making some accusations of us, and I would be happy to answer that person's questions if they would like to tell me to call me directly. And that phone number is 734-660-4260. But I've made it a habit to not respond or answer questions when they don't tell me who they are.
Laura, hold on. Okay, because what you got was an anonymous letter from some cowardly person who refused to identify himself, just making just toxic insults about the show, etc. And I want to bore you here for a minute with a parable, and why I feel sorry for that person, because that person obviously is carrying a great deal of anger, hostility, and resentment. And will you allow me to relate this parable?
Sure,
Laura,
I guess.
It'll take a couple minutes, but it's a parable about Buddha, and it's about anger. And this is what it is. After many days of travel, Buddha arrived at a small town to give a speech. Everyone was happy to see him except one young man. While Buddha spoke, the man was shouting at him. Buddha did not pay any attention and continued speaking. This infuriated the man even more. He walked directly in front of Buddha and continued to ridicule him. You have no right to teach others. You're stupid and you're a fake. The crowd began to react to this young man's caustic behavior. Buddha stopped the crowd from turning against him and said, "It's not always necessary to counter aggression by aggression." Instead, he turned to the man and asked, "If you buy a gift for someone and that person does not take it, to whom does that gift belong?" Mm-hmm. The young man was surprised by the question, thought for a moment, and answered, "It would belong to me because I bought the gift." The Buddha said, "Correct. It's the same with your anger. If you become angry with me and I don't feel insulted nor accept your hostility, the anger falls back on you as it was initially yours to give. You are then the only one who becomes unhappy, not me. All you've done is hurt yourself." And so Buddha concluded, "As a mirror reflects an object, as a still lake reflects the sky, take care that what you speak or act is for good. For goodness will always cast back goodness, and harm will always cast back harm. No matter what the situation, if you surrender yourself to anger, if you surrender your personal power to others, they will always take your life away from you. Instead, be the mirror, the reflection of themselves. Now, the only person who truly gets infected by their negativity is them." In other words, when someone is a hater, when someone is toxic, you don't accept that hate. You don't accept that toxicity. By not accepting it, that person has to keep it themselves, and they stew in that animosity and that hostility. That's their problem, not yours. So to the extent that some coward sends a toxic letter like that, that's his problem, not mine. All right, continue.
All right, so let's talk about covenants and deeds that Looks like in 1948, the U.S. Supreme Court ruled that racial restrictive covenants were unenforceable. But after that, they still continued. Talk to me about that.
Yeah, there are two. First of all, racial covenants were even recommended by the federal government back before 1948. The Federal Housing Administration then actually recommended restrictive racial covenants so that communities would remain, quote, homogenous. And that was what was struck down in 1948. But many subdivision developers continued to include them in their usual, what I call HOAs, homeowner association covenants, the covenants and restrictions that apply to different subdivisions, now condominiums. Excuse me, I have a frog in my throat. But for example, one of the most prominent ones was in Levittown, the earliest subdivision. I think there were 17,000 homes, something like that, built in Levittown. Huge. This is the forerunner of modern subdivisions with the houses, parks, pools, schools, etc. And let's see, the restrictive covenant in Levittown read, the tenant agrees not to permit the premises to be used or occupied by any person other than members of the Caucasian race, but the employment and maintenance of other than the Caucasian domestic servants shall be permitted. That is not enforceable. It is strictly prohibited throughout the entire United States. You cannot enforce it. But what has to surprise someone of color is that when they get title work on buying property in one of the older subdivisions, you know, and they exist. A lot of the subdivisions date back to the early 1900s. They get the title work. They get a copy of the restrictive covenants, and they see this, and they say, how can this possibly be? And, in fact, there is a movement to have them stricken from the older restrictive covenant documents simply because they are so blatantly offensive. But that's an example of direct, intentional discrimination, and in this case, racial discrimination. But intentional discrimination exists with respect to not just race, but also with respect to religion, with respect to disability, with respect to LGBT, et cetera. But that's intentional discrimination. There's also another type of discrimination, which is it can be intentional, but it is less obvious. And the best example I can give you of that is, and there these still exist, and I've dealt with some of these over the years in my practice, a subdivision in which property is not sold to the individual, but rather there's a lease for typically 90 or 99 years. And then the original developer has the right to approve whoever it is that applies for the lease. In other words, I own the house. It's built on leased land. Now, when I go to sell my house, the purchaser has to be, quote, approved by the developer or the developer's successor, which is the subdivision association. And so now that becomes a device by which someone who wishes to discriminate against someone of color, against any other, someone who is Jewish, which was fairly common discrimination for years, that still is to some extent, or other against Muslims, whatever it may be, they now have the ability under the guise of approving a tenant for this land lease to discriminate. That is illegal, even though it doesn't specifically say that this is the way that it is, a covenant that intentionally says we discriminate on the basis against non-Caucasians. It's nevertheless discriminatory. And then there's a third kind of discrimination, which is called disparate impact, in which a conduct which is not deliberately intended to discriminate on the basis of any of the protected classes actually does end up as a product of that discriminate. The best example that I can think of is an employer, for example, that gives a test to determine reaction time of the applicant. Well, look, I'm an older guy. My reaction time isn't going to be the same as somebody that's in their 30s. So I end up losing because of the reaction time test. Nevertheless, if it doesn't relate to whatever the job function is, then it has a disparate impact on a protected classification, namely the basis of age, and is discriminatory. So those three kinds of discrimination. But I think the one you wanted to talk about most was the one which is something which is a restrictive covenant, and that clearly unenforceable. So, go ahead.
Yeah, I'm just listening. I think you're doing a great job there. So it looks like restrictive covenants started in 1917.
Go ahead.
With Buchanan versus Wehrle. And they were, you know, like you had said, really put in place to restrict people from selling to certain individuals. It wasn't just African-American, but primarily African-American. What would happen to them if someone during the time before they were deemed illegal or unenforceable, what would happen to an individual if they sold to someone who didn't fit the description of the person who was supposed to be in that particular community?
Well, that was the 1948 case, I think, actually, that was brought by the others in the neighborhood. I'm trying to remember the facts of the case. But, no, what happened was, what typically would happen is others who were in that particular subdivision where the restrictive covenant existed would then bring a lawsuit to either prevent the sale or to have the sale undone. And I believe that's what the 1948 case held, was that, in fact, that was an unenforceable, racially restrictive covenant and could not be enforced. But that's who would bring the enforcement. I don't know that it was necessarily the municipality that would take enforcement action, since it was a private restriction. But generally, it's like any restrictive covenant in a subdivision or in a condominium association. Any member of the association has the ability to bring a lawsuit to enforce that restrictive covenant, if it's enforceable. Obviously, a racially restrictive covenant is not, as we're discussing.
Yeah, so basically it's steering, there's a
document. No. That's not steering. And steering is entirely different. Steering is more. Well, it isn't always, but it is generally found in that second category of discriminatory activity, in which steering is a realtor shows property to someone who's in a protected class and steers them away from a particular neighborhood that the realtor is considering to be homogenous in terms of Caucasians. In other words, we're going to steer this particular applicant who's looking to buy a house, we're going to steer that person to a different neighborhood. Same thing with respect to leasing, is if someone is showing property for lease, steering them to a particular neighborhood and away from another neighborhood. And this has been a huge issue within the realty industry.
Yeah, and steering really probably started when the restrictive covenants became unenforceable in 1948, because think of the pressure that was put on realtors in particular, if they were going to sell in a neighborhood that had a restricted covenant, and the neighbors would put pressure on that person so that they would steer the black resident to a non-white neighborhood.
I don't know. I don't get the relationship between the racially restrictive covenant and steering. You got to remember that the first MLS, it's the MLS, the National Association of Realtors, its forerunner. I'm trying to remember the name of it, but the first MLS was 1903. I mean, we're talking years and years ago. That's 120 years ago, and the MLS itself would provide, before the 1948 decision, would provide that this is a racially restricted neighborhood. So, I mean, the realtor industry, you know, in the letter we got, the guy says we're trashing realtors, we're trashing appraisers. We're not at all. We're saying exactly the opposite, that in fact, historically, what has happened was that the racially discriminatory activity, which has been recognized by all of those industries, by the realtors, by the lenders, and by the appraisers, so that in fact the vast majority of the professionals within those separate occupations or professions are not discriminating. The problem we have is, and what you and I spend a fair amount of our time doing in terms of educating people associated with the real estate industry, is that that minority needs to understand that you are not to engage in this kind of conduct, because it is discriminatory, not just on the basis of race, and on the basis of all of the other protected classifications of individuals. That's where we're coming from in terms of trying to educate people as to what the law is, providing the history as to what happened, but then saying, this is what the law is, this is how you should be conducting yourself. We're saying the vast majority...
Can't change the future without knowing the history, right? There's a really, and I think I've said it before, there's a really good documentary out there called The Long Island Divide. If somebody wants to Google that, you will see some really interesting information on basically steering on Long Island that's current, that's happening in today's marketplace. And Long Island, New York is a very segregated community, apparently, or area, and it's a three-year investigation on realtors and how they treat different individuals of all, and they had several different types of testers go into real estate companies and ask the same questions, and the documentary is fascinating, and it really opens your eyes as to what goes on in today's world, which is unfortunate. So Google Long Island Divide and take a gander at that.
All right, we're close to the end here, I think, and I want to apologize for taking up so much time with that parable, but I want to emphasize that this is the way I live my life. In other words, you don't accept the toxicity, you don't accept the anger of anybody else. They have to retain that anger. They have to live with it themselves. It's their problem, not mine. And these are has nothing to do with real estate, but these are words to live by, and I think a lot of our society, a lot of the problems we have is everybody wants to react to all the toxicity, all of the anger, all the hostility, all the negativity, all the insults. If you simply let them roll off your back, let the person keep that, it's a gift that you are unwilling to accept, and they have to keep it themselves. So much for preaching.
So much for preaching. Okay, well, let's sell some real estate then. 3435... Carlton Boulevard, a three-bedroom, two-bath, nice house with a large pole barn, a nice piece of property on the corner. It's like being in the country, but you're in Summit Township, although Summit Township does have some country living. And that one's 173.9. Also, we have... one on St. Clair, that's another three-bedroom, two-bath home, and it is main-floor laundry, oversized yard, oversized garage, beautiful porch, patio, what am I trying to say, with a fireplace and grilling and all this wonderful stuff. And then there's vacant land on the corner of Cooper and Porter Street up by the highway, commercial. That's $100,000. And what else do we have? Anyhow, I've got a one-bedroom, first-floor apartment and a three-bedroom, one-bath, a two-story duplex. It's attached for rent. So if you're considering buying or selling, you should be thinking real estate. Call Laura Dwyer Schlechte. 734-660-4260 is my cell, or my office at 517-780-3800.